Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show, Medical Monday. I'm Alan Shartok. In the studio today is Dr. Asher Weiner, an ophthalmologist with Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region in Troy, New York. A practicing ophthalmologist for more than 24 years, Dr. Weiner completed his medical training at the Hebrew University and Hadassah Medical School in Jerusalem, Israel, before joining Ophthalmic Consultants of the Capital Region. Dr. Weiner practiced ophthalmology at a multi-location private practice located north of Detroit, Michigan. Dr. Weiner was also director of the University Ophthalmic Consultants at Long Island College Hospital in Brooklyn, New York. He has held educational positions at Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan, William Beaumont Hospital in Royal Oaks, Michigan, and at SUNY Downstate. Call us at 1-800-348-2551. Phones are already beginning to ring. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page or the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall on wall post on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMC Radio. You can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. And the one I would recommend, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We'll try to get your questions in during the show. Dr. Weiner, let me start by asking you about what you do. You have a real specialty, don't you?
Yeah. I specialize in glaucoma, especially glaucoma surgery, doing research on that as well. And I also do cataracts, but the main specialty is glaucoma.
And glaucoma can be caused by pressure in the eye, right? That's one way.
Yes. Well, there are many kinds of glaucoma. There are more than 40 types of glaucoma.
Wow.
Some of them can be caused by high pressure, but normal pressure does not exclude glaucoma. In fact, a third of all glaucoma patients never have high eye pressures.
Interesting. So a third don't have high pressure. So when we go to the doctor and they check for that, there are other things that can have. Now, what about the ophthalmic nerve?
The optic nerve. Well,
that's a very
interesting structure because it's actually part of the brain. And when we look into the eye and we see the optic nerve, we actually look at the brain. So many people ask me if I see their thoughts, and sometimes I do.
Well, people who have are there things that you can do to repair, or is it almost always to diagnose in order to save somebody's sight?
The main thing these days is still to prevent the disease, treat the disease. We cannot bring back what's lost. The optic nerve that is dying from glaucoma cannot be repaired, although there is a lot of research being done. Hopefully, with stem cells and others, we'll be able one day to do that. But right now, the mainstay of treatment, well-proven treatment, is to lower the eye pressure to stabilize the glaucoma.
I can't help but ask this silly question, but I want to ask you this. You know, we see a lot of movies where somebody's blind and then somebody does something and all of a sudden they can see. Have you ever seen that happen?
I've seen that. You can see that with, say, cataracts, some opacity, corneal opacity. And when you repair this, then, yes, you can see it. And unfortunately, if it's because the optic nerve is dead, then no.
Wow. Okay, so we have a lot of people on the phone. Dr. Weiner, let's proceed. Let's go to Caroline in Red Hook. Okay. Caroline, you're on.
Ooh, hi.
Hey.
My question is about cataracts. I'm 56, otherwise very healthy, and the doctor just noticed that I have the beginning of cataracts. The test, when he did testing, there was still a slight blurriness even when I picked out the best choice. And what I want to know is I've been doing some reading in nutritional healing, and there are some supplements that they say are helpful for healing or retarding the growth of cataracts, copper and manganese, L-lysine, which you can only take for about 6 months at a time, vitamin E and vitamin C. And I'm wondering, lutein and xanthan. I'm wondering what your feeling is on doing something like this, and also about getting cataracts at such a young age.
How young?
Well, I'm 56, and I consider that young.
No, that's young, sure.
I have not worn sunglasses a lot in my life, which may have contributed to it, but my optometrist, who's a very thorough and careful guy, says he's noticing more and more cases of cataracts developing in people in their 40s and 50s, which is unusual compared to what it used to be.
Okay, Caroline, only because there's so many people behind you,
yep.
Well, why don't we consider that the question and ask for comment from Dr. Weiner?
Well, it's a great question, of course. What we know is there are some risk factors for the development of cataracts, for example, radiation, the ultraviolet radiation from the sun, so you want to protect yourself from that. Maybe secondhand smoking, you want to stay away from that as well.
Yeah, not an issue.
Good. Nutritional issues, it's really based mostly on oxidation, mm-hmm. oxidation damage. And everything that you use as an antioxidant can help maybe slow down the process. I don't think it can reverse it, as far as we know.
Yep.
And I think that we kind of still live in a world where if you live long enough, you're probably going to develop cataracts. I don't know that you can totally prevent it. As far as the age, that's a very interesting question. I don't know that I have a good answer. Maybe nutrition has to do with it. Maybe exposure to the sun, how people like to tan so much these days. That may have something to do with that.
I'm wondering if drugs can be part of it, because I noticed on an antidepressant medication that they warn you not to take it if you have cataracts, and that it can cause blurred vision. And with the increasing incidence or use of antidepressants starting in the 80s and running through the 90s, I'm wondering if that could be a contributing factor.
And that's a very good observation. It's quite a possibility.
Okay, Caroline,
thank you so much
for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Caroline.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, we'll go to Bonnie in Asheville. Bonnie, you're on.
Hello.
Hi, Bonnie.
Thanks for taking my call. The question I have is that I've been really nearsighted all my life, and I recently had bleeding. A blood vessel has bled through into the eye and caused really distorted vision. I've had shots of some kind of a cancer treatment originally, but I found out it works in the eyes to dry up the blood vessel. I'm wondering, in your experience, does this reoccur once it has been, the treatment's completed and everything's back to normal?
Well, first of all, nearsighted people like you, eyes like that, are somewhat prone to growth of blood vessels in the macula, and I assume that that's what you had and that's what you've been treated for. And just like in macular degeneration, yes, the possibility of recurrence is there, and you need to follow and monitor with your doctor, and it sounds like he's doing a good job, he or she.
What is macular degeneration?
Well, that's a different kind. Think of it as a wear and tear of the center of the retina, the area responsible for the high resolution, like 20/20 vision.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very small area. We're talking about, half a millimeter maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that happens there can distort the vision, but that has to do more with age-related, probably, again, damage from oxidation, accumulation of debris or materials that accumulate there, and blood vessels then can grow and cause swelling, cause a bleed, and, of course, distortion of the vision.
So I've heard in the past, people have explained it as being peripheral, related to peripheral vision. Is that wrong?
No, with macular degeneration, in the worst scenario,
yeah.
Mostly, you lose the center. You have like a blurry spot in the middle, but you do retain the peripheral vision.
Oh, I see.
You don't go totally blind. You never need a dog or a cane, but you could be ending up with a blurry spot in the middle.
Okay. Bonnie?
I just have one other question. He said that it's often caused because as you get older and your eyeball is elongated rather than round, the walls tend to be thinner, which allows the blood vessel to bleed through. He didn't call it, I think you said, macular degeneration, and he said that he thought that often when it was cured, it did not reoccur, but I don't remember what he actually called it, but it really distorted the vision horribly.
Right. No, I need to clarify. Macular degeneration is a different entity. in which blood vessels can grow. So this is probably not what you have, but you have what we call myopic maculopathy, and you have those growth of blood vessels, whether it's related to a thin wall, whether it's related to ischemia or lack of oxygen in such retina that we know is a little weaker perhaps in nearsighted people. That's a good question, and hopefully it will never recur.
Hey, Bonnie, thank you very much. Okay. Appreciate
it. Yeah, bye.
I want to apologize for that because I'm the one who led you down the road there on macular degeneration. So there was a little confusion, but you were quite right. You had described it correctly. We're going to take a short break, only a few seconds. 1-800-348-2551. Again, 1-800-348-2551. Couple of free phones now. Get in now.
Support for WAMC comes from St. Francis Hospital and Health Centers, Poughkeepsie, celebrating 100 years serving the healthcare needs of the community, including the Red L Cancer Care Center, emergency and trauma care, and advanced robotic surgery, sfhospital.org. Healthy Living Market and Cafe, featuring the Divine Wine Store, with wines from all over the world, with pairings, monthly tastings, and events, healthylivingmarket.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond, 518-580-8080. And Paradise Copies, Northampton, Massachusetts, providing printing design for customers for over 20 years, from digital to offset, color copies, scans, logos, and more, ParadiseCopies.com.
I'm hoping that we get a couple of calls on glaucoma because that is your specialty, doctor. And one of the things I want to know is, again, what is glaucoma?
Glaucoma is a disease of the optic nerves. There are many kind of conditions that affect the optic nerves. Glaucoma is a specific one, even though there are many, many types of glaucoma. It has certain features. It has certain risk factors. It's probably genetic, probably affected by multiple genetic conditions or formulations. And the treatment that we know is lowering the eye pressure.
Now, you can go blind from glaucoma, can you not?
Unfortunately, that's absolutely correct.
Can you die from it?
No.
Okay. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Okay, let's go to Rachel in Amherst. Okay, Rachel, you're on.
Hello? Hello?
Hi there.
Well, Rachel.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is about medical marijuana and glaucoma. Do you think that it can be effective in slowing down the disease?
It's a very touchy subject. There is a statement by the American Glaucoma Society stating that we do not support marijuana as a treatment for glaucoma. The drug does decrease the eye pressure somewhat, and therefore it is potentially helpful in glaucoma. But it's a kind of a short effect, and basically you need to use it 24 hours a day to have it effective. And, of course, we cannot support something like that.
What about non-psychoactive forms, like the raw juiced leaf?
Well, again, the question is how helpful it is. If you can use it without being affected psychologically or mentally by that, and you can show that it's effective enough to help the glaucoma, I suppose there wouldn't be a major issue, but we are concerned about the other effects of the drug.
Okay, thanks for the information.
And thank you, Rachel. Call again.
Okay.
Let's go to Bob in Port Ewan. Bob, you're on.
Gentlemen, good afternoon. Doctor, my wife is has a problem with floaters in her eyes. Is there any ways of dealing with that?
So the connection is not very good, so I want to repeat it. The question is about floaters in the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah. Floaters are actually changes in the gel in the back of the eye, what we call the vitreous body. These are probably kind of conglomerates of proteins that are floating around. Sometimes it's simply the back of the gel that has separated from the retina. By itself, it's something that you kind of have to get used to. you know, vision is very subjective. And if you decide to ignore something, your brain will help you just ignore it. It can also be, of course, a warning sign. If there are many floaters all of a sudden, it could also be a sign of retinal tear or impending retinal detachment. So if you have something new, like new many floaters, in addition to flashes of lights and other issues like shadows, you should see your ophthalmologist immediately.
And what treatments are there for that?
Well, for the floaters themselves, probably not really. I know that there have been trials or attempts to treat it with a laser. Basically, somebody would laser those and kind of break them apart so that you would notice them less. But I believe there is a risk to the retina from that. So usually we do not recommend that. We recommend instead just to kind of get used to it. One of those things that you can live with if you only decide to ignore them.
And can the tear be repaired by laser?
I mean, if this is related or secondary to a tear, then, of course, you need to have immediate treatment. If it's an early stage, you can certainly treat it with laser sealing off the tear. If it's larger than that, there are other treatment options.
Like what?
Well, you can do something like injection of a gas to seal off the place, but otherwise you may need the full-blown surgery.
Bob, thank you for the call. I think it's a very important subject. I'll tell you why very important, because I have them. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Gary in Walden. Gary in Walden, you're on.
Hello there. I like some people calling in, I've been wearing glasses since I was 5 years old, and I've also had retinal detachments. I actually have a buckle on one of my eyes, all of which makes me think eyes aren't really very well made. And I often wonder, like from an evolutionary point of view, why don't they work better? Why are so many people nearsighted and farsighted?
Well, that's an amazing question. First of all, I think that eyes actually are something that is amazing. I think that it's a star of development. It's very difficult. I can't speak for whoever designed them, but I think that they are an amazing piece of equipment. They're very delicate. They give you high resolution. And as such, they're also prone to trouble. And you have many layers in the eye. They are prone to trouble, tears, and so on, just like you had. It's a great question. Of course, the nearsightedness, or the farsightedness, that means that the size of your eye globe is not just right. If it's just right, not too large, not too small, then you would see afar without glasses and you would not need glasses. But, you know, human race is a range and everything is a range, and there are some with larger eyes, some with smaller eyes, and that's why we're not perfect and that's why we're so great.
Okay, Gary, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. All right, let's go to Jim in Otis, Mass. 1-800-348-2551. You're talking to Dr. Asher Weiner. Thank you very much. Okay, Jim, you're on.
Hi, yeah, I have a question about I think it's a sty. On Friday, I noticed my eye was starting to swell up, and it swelled up. It continued to swell up. This is my right eye. Continued to swell up over the weekend, and now I have like a pocket of swelling under my right eye, and I'm wondering, I don't think I got bit by a mosquito or anything, and when I pull the lower lid up, I see there's a little bump there. Is that a sty?
Well, it certainly could be, but it sounds like you need to see an ophthalmologist pretty quickly just to make sure that that's the case. Hopefully you don't have an infection or something that needs treatment for that. So I wouldn't assume anything. I would certainly see your ophthalmologist fairly quickly.
Okay. Thank you.
I wanted to add on to Jim's question. What happens if you get poison ivy of the eye?
Well, it's just like any other toxic reaction. You need treatment for that, and you need to protect the eye globe. So you need to see an ophthalmologist.
And what do you do? I mean, what would the ophthalmologist do if you get poisoned?
Well, it depends. Again, if there is any danger to the eye globe, he'll take the right measures.
Yeah,
and,
go ahead.
And if it's just around periocular, as we call it, then there are things to decrease the swelling, and you need to make sure mostly is that the eye globe is safe.
Okay. We'll go now to Denise in Granby, Connecticut. 1-800-348-2551. Denise, you're on. Denise? Uh-oh. think number one. Denise, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Now we can. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The doctor had mentioned about who designed the eye, and I'm curious about who designed the compact fluorescent light bulb. At 55 years old, I needed reading glasses and distance glasses and was just about to get bifocals when I was in close contact with a compact fluorescent light bulb.
And the question, I take it, Denise, is did the compact fluorescent light bulb cause your eye problem?
Yes, because I suddenly have been diagnosed with dry macular dystrophy, or specifically villiform lesion dry macular dystrophy, and it came on about 1 week after the exposure when I accidentally was about 1 foot away and looked at a CFL for a microsecond, but then was in the general environment of it for a period of time.
Well, it's a good question. I'm not sure what the correct answer is. You need to know exactly what comes out of that bulb to make sure that there's no radiation or any light focused on one spot in the macula. I remember many years ago we saw an ophthalmologist that during his treating somebody with a laser, there was something wrong with the laser, and he had a reflection of the laser beam back straight into his eye, and he came to us when I was at the Massachusetts Eye and Ear at that point in Boston. In training, and we saw a damage to his retina, and he was very lucky it was not just in the center. So things can happen, of course. I think that you should see a retina specialist in order to evaluate that.
That I have done.
Very
All
good.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you
Thank
very
you.
Much.
Okay.
Let's go to Daniel in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, who has, well, look at that, a glaucoma question. Daniel, you're up.
Hello?
Hello, Daniel. You're on.
Yeah. I had my daughter had a problem, you know, and then they say it's a glaucoma. So what happened? Because I don't have that kind of thing in my family.
Oh, so in other words, you don't have glaucoma in your family. The doctor has already told us that sometime it can be a hereditary issue. Right, Dunk?
Yeah. Glaucoma is probably the result of some genetic matrix, probably some genetic defects. I just noticed another study that came out maybe a week ago. I just read it yesterday, and they did not succeed in finding the exact genetic defects in those in what we call the primary open-angle glaucoma, the more common type, although we know that there are some genetic influences. So even though there is a negative family history of glaucoma, as you describe, it does not rule out the possibility that genetic influences have something to do with the development of glaucoma. I don't know how old your daughter is.
It's 15 years old now.
15?
Yeah. But when she had that, it was around, I think, 13.
At
13.
13.
Yeah, she was 13 when she has that problem, they say,
right,
it's caused by...
So it seems from what you describe that she has what we call the juvenile type of glaucoma. We do know that this is probably related to genetic defects. In fact, some of them have already been discovered. And in fact, there was another study recently showing that you can have that even with normal pressure and still have glaucoma. And that was very impressive. I just read it again yesterday. So I believe that it is genetic, even though the family history is negative.
Thank you, Daniel.
So what do you want us to do? You know, because actually we went to the doctor, we do everything, they did the surgery. Now he doesn't have anything infection. So what I'm supposed to do every for her? So that kind of thing doesn't come back.
Glaucoma never goes away. It might have been treated with surgery in order to reduce the eye pressure to stabilize the disease, but you need to continue to be monitored by her pediatric ophthalmologist or a glaucoma specialist in order to make sure that the pressure is controlled and that the glaucoma is not progressing. You need to be monitored with her all the time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
All right.
1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in now are better. Let's go to Shelley in Woodstock. Shelley in Woodstock, you're on.
Hi. I am having trouble driving at night. I'm 69 years old, and I decided to go to the eye doctor, and she told me that I had dry eyes and that that could make it more difficult at night because your eye is scratched or something. I'm not sure about it, and I'm really not sure what you do about it.
No, it's a great question, don't you think, Doctor? Because a lot of people who get older have, you know, reflection problems and other things at night.
Absolutely. You said that you are 69-year-old?
Yes.
Well, first, the dry eye is definitely a possibility. We know that dry eyes make things worse and difficult, and lubricating the eyes with lubricating eye drop, what we call the artificial tears, is certainly helpful. You can even see better. But what you have to also make sure that there are no other things that can cause issues of glare, for example, at night driving, difficulty driving at night for various reasons, including the glare. So you need to rule out things like cataracts that might be more affecting you than you think. It might be, of course, problems of the retina. Peripheral vision can be affected and cause you to be at more difficulty at night driving and so on. So certainly you have to be sure that those conditions don't affect your eyes. I would certainly try the artificial tears, use them on a regular basis several times a day, and if it doesn't help you significantly, I would go back and make sure that your eye doctor checks all these potential factors.
Well, wouldn't she have checked all that when I went to see her?
Well, probably yes. You know, I don't know who the doctor was and so on. I trust that they did a good job examining you. At 69, I would imagine that you do have at least a touch of a cataract. You can certainly, there are ways to test it and make sure that this is not one of the main reasons that give you that trouble. But, you know, I can only go by what you tell me.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Shelley.
Bye.
Okay. Let's go to Dan in Albany. Dan, you're on.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I have a question about, I have a problem with the muscles in my eye have been enlarged, and I was told due to fluid building up there because I have a hypothyroid condition. But when I told this to my endocrinologist when I went back for the thyroid treatment, he told me that wasn't the case, that it wouldn't have anything to do with it, and I'm a little confused about why I got the two different explanations, but if there's anything, I don't know.
Well,
anything about that.
Well, that's actually a great question. We ask about the thyroid and sight. What do you think, Don?
Well, there are a couple of things that we need to know here. You could have Graves' disease. That's the name of the disease where you have swelling of the eye muscles with relation to the thyroid. And you can have that even if the all the tests on the thyroid are normal, what we call euthyroid. So the fact that you don't have any abnormalities on blood tests does not necessarily rule out that this is Graves' disease. On the other hand, there are other conditions that can cause that. You can have inflammatory conditions, what we call myositis, that can cause that as well. And then you need a little bit more extensive workup to try to find the cause of the swelling of the muscles. There are ways to distinguish between the two, say on imaging, MRI, and so on. So you can certainly evaluate that with your doctor. Maybe you want to see an orbital specialist, usually a plastic, ophthalmic plastic orbital specialist can take care of this and differentiate between the two conditions. And the most important thing would be to protect the eye globe, of course.
The eye globe, because the swelling would put pressure on it?
That's exactly right.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Dan, thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's go to Catherine in Rupert, Vermont, who has another glaucoma question.
Hi. I have normal tension glaucoma. I'm 61. I was diagnosed with this at the age of 48. I've been on latanoprost drops every day since then, and my right eye is just getting worse and worse. I'm supposed to go see my ophthalmologist on Thursday for a visual field test and a follow-up appointment to talk to him about it. In addition to this, I've recently developed really bad vertigo and a loud ringing in both of my ears. I also have a benign brain aneurysm, which I'm due to get checked again with an MRI. Not to throw all of these things at you at once. My question is, since I'm going to have an MRI for the aneurysm anyway, is there something that my ophthalmologist might want to see on an MRI? Like I could ask him to add on to that prescription for an MRI through my main doctor, or they could talk about what they might see together?
Well, that's a great question. We used to do a lot of workups for people with normal tension glaucoma. This is the type of glaucoma we mentioned before where the pressure is always within normal. And so we used to kind of rule out any other condition that might cause something that looks like glaucoma. But let's assume for a second that you have the correct features of low-tension glaucoma. In that case, I would say that there's nothing really on MRI or CAT scan that can contribute further. Again, as long as the ophthalmologist is convinced indeed that this is glaucoma. So the answer is no, but it sounds like the medication may be causing trouble. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
No, the drops are fine. I just seem to be getting all these other weird symptoms at the same time as my right eye seems to be getting worse and worse. So, you know, I mean, I have really loud ringing in my ears, and I might have Meniere's disease, and, you know, I've seen an ENT, but, you know, they're just all conspiring. All these little symptoms seem to conspire to... I just want to put my head in a scan and have somebody tell me what's going on. But
let's get an answer, Catherine, because we're up against a break here.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I think it sounds to me like the ENT doctor and the ophthalmologist need to work together to sort out the different problems that you come from, different origins there,
okay,
in order to differentiate and help you the best. That's what it sounds to me.
That's great. Okay, that's what I'll do then. Pull him into the line.
Catherine,
there you go.
Thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thank you.
Nicole.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Middletown Medical, with walk-in urgent care centers in Middletown and Ellenville for the treatment of injuries and illness. Minimal wait times, evening and weekend hours. MiddletownMedical.com for insurance providers. Curtis Lumber, providing kitchens, baths, doors, and windows, paint, flooring, and more since 1890. With 21 locations in New York and northern Vermont, CurtisLumber.com. Express Pediatrics Highland, walk-in urgent care for children, open Monday through Friday from 5 p.m. to midnight, weekends noon to midnight, ExpressPediatrics.com. Henry's at the Farm Restaurant, Milton, located at Buttermilk Falls Inn, 4 miles south of the Mid-Hudson Bridge. Dinner Wednesday through Sunday, lunch Friday and Saturday, and Sunday brunch. Henry's at buttermilk.com. And Saugerties Artist Studio Tour, presenting 36 artists and artisans working in varied techniques and styles. Open studios this Saturday and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saugerties Art Tour.com.
Okay, coming up right now from our wonderful Jessica Blaustein Marshall, assistant news director, is are some questions that have been social mediaized into this studio. Go ahead, Jessica.
Yep, we have a question via email from Ariel in Montague. She asks, how can a person distinguish between a visual migraine and the beginnings of a detached retina?
Very good question. Migraines, as you know, comes in a certain pattern, and so those who know what migraines or feel it kind of know how you get the aura before the headache comes, some of the visual zigzag lights that we see, multicolored. On the other hand, retinal detachment, first of all, it's not something that comes on a regular basis, as you know, and it's probably involved all kinds of flashes of lights, not zigzag colored lights type. It can have shadows, it can have many floaters. And in any case, if it's first time ever something that is happening to you, do not assume migraine. Assume that you need to be checked right away.
Okay, Jessica.
Great. We also have a question via email from Joe, who asks, how reliable is the glaucoma puff test when you go to the eye doctor?
Well, there are two factors here. First of all, is pressure check by itself sufficient? It's been called the glaucoma check. Unfortunately, it's of very little value. In fact, we noted even those that have high pressures, if you check them one time only, half of them will not show high pressures. And then the second factor is which device to use to check your pressure. Right now, the most reliable or considered reliable would be an applanation, which is a contact type and not a puff test. So I certainly would not rely on any pressure check, especially the puff test, as the glaucoma check. This is just not correct.
And what does the word puff mean in this case?
Well, when you use an airstream to puff against the cornea, and then it measures the pressure without contact.
Oh, got it. Jessica?
We have one more. This one is from Patrick in Williamstown. He asks, how does one prevent glaucoma? He said you talked about prevention. Now he wants to know, does diet, blood pressure, diabetes, et cetera?
There are certainly risk factors. If you have diabetes, you're prone to troubles with your drainage system, for example, that cause something that we call neovascular glaucoma. If you are being treated on a regular basis by your retina specialist and so on, hopefully that can be prevented. Glaucoma per se probably cannot be prevented, but you can detect it early. And it's a tricky big thing because probably half of all patients with glaucoma don't even know they have it. And they don't get checked, or they have this pressure check and it's good, and they assume everything is okay. So detection, having it checked by a trained eye care professional who knows glaucoma, can detect it early and treat it so that you can prevent the vision loss associated with glaucoma.
Well, Jessica, thank you so much for being with us.
No problem.
It's your first day at work.
It is.
We're delighted to have you here. Okay, let's go to Kathleen in Rhinebeck. Kathleen, you're on.
Hello?
Hey, you're on.
Thank you very much. I have a question. I've been diagnosed with glaucoma probably close to 10 years ago. I'm just turned 54, and I've been on eye drops for several years. I do go see my regular eye doctor for pressure checks every 6 weeks and into the city to see a specialist every 6 months to a year. And they're now debating about, they're starting to talk about surgery, which makes me a little bit nervous. My pressure has remained steady at about 18 per eye, but it hasn't gone down significantly. And my regular eye doctor, that concerns him. He wishes it were lower.
Doctor?
Have your doctors seen signs of the glaucoma progressing?
Every year I also take the field of vision test, and in one eye, in one quadrant, that is beginning to diminish a little bit.
Well, first of all, it needs to be confirmed probably by retesting just to make sure it's not a fluke and to make sure that indeed that's correct. If this is correct, and also I'm sure they are examining the optic nerves themselves and verifying that they are not changing, but if there is a sign of progression, then that means that probably the pressure is still not low enough, and it sounds like they're correct in terms of the need to lower the eye pressure. Now, how to do that? There are many options. There are laser treatments. There are, of course, surgeries, and there are more treatment, more medications. So there are so many options involved but it sounds like that's what's needed, and you should have a good discussion with your doctors as to what means to achieve the goal of lowering the eye pressure.
Okay. So then it does seem like a logical step. They have talked about laser surgery next. Or laser treatment, I guess it would be called, not surgery.
Absolutely. If your glaucoma shows progression under that steady pressure of 18 or so, that it needs to be done. Also, do you happen to know the thickness of the cornea? Is it too thin, too thick perhaps?
I believe it's getting thicker. They do. I go to the doctor every 6 months at least, so I am being thoroughly checked.
A point to make that the corneal thickness has to do a lot with the pressure that we measure. If your cornea, for example, is thinner than normal, which is a real risk factor for glaucoma, it also makes us underestimate the pressure when we measure it. So, for example, if your cornea is thin, your pressure may be not 18, but perhaps 22 or 23. I'm just throwing numbers in there. But that means that the 18 is not really 18. But regardless, if it progresses under 18, then you need probably at least 30%+ lower pressure, and then, of course, to be monitored again.
Okay, Kathleen, got to let you go. Five people behind you. Thanks so much
Thanks
for
so
calling.
Much. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Valerie in Lenox with one N. Thank you, Valerie. You're on.
Hello?
Yeah, go.
Hi. I have a question. I just saw an ophthalmologist last week because I was having trouble wearing my gas-permeable contact lens for the past month, and he diagnosed Salzmann nodule. So he has given me prednisolone drops for 2 weeks, hoping it will melt it away. But if not, he mentions some sort of laser treatment. So my question to you is, what is the likelihood that the drops will melt it away statistically? And then if I do have to have this laser treatment, what does that entail? What is the recovery? Are there side effects? Can it change my vision?
Well, all I can tell you is you got four people behind you, and I want to, you know, give everybody a chance to get in. So, doctor, why don't you take a fast attempt at this?
Well, I'm hoping that you're seeing a corneal specialist because there are all kinds of options. One option is not to do anything, all the way to surgery and scraping them off and so on. So I think this is something that you really need to discuss with a corneal specialist in order to get the right treatment for your specific eyes. Of course, it creates a problem with wearing contact lenses, and contact lenses are an issue in any kind of a corneal condition. So again, this is something that you really need to address with the corneal specialist once they really see your cornea to give you the best options there.
Valerie, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very
Thanks.
Much. Okay. Let's go to BJ in Poughkeepsie. BJ, you're on.
Hi, how's it going? I won't take up too much of your time.
Okay,
I'm in my
great.
mid-20s, and my night vision is very, very bad. And as well as that, at night, when headlights are behind me, it's almost blinding to my eyes. I can barely see anything. To the point where sometimes if there's too many cars behind me, I'll have to pull over and wait for them to pass before I can see again. I'm not sure. I've been to the eye doctor, and they told me that my vision, as it is for reading and sight and that sort of thing, is fine. But they couldn't really give me a diagnosis on why my eyes are so sensitive to bright light at night.
And you're saying that this is something new, not something that you've had all your life?
I just developed probably in the last 2 or 3 years.
Well, there are various optical issues in the eye that can do that, can cause that kind of glare. This is
okay.
A very impressive story that you're telling, so it needs to be checked, of course. Anything from corneal opacities to even a cataract, even though you're young, the things that can happen even in your age. And
okay.
The other range of the spectrum would be to check retinal conditions, maybe see a retinal specialist to make sure that you don't have any kind of a retinal condition, dystrophy, degeneration, or whatnot, that can also lead to such impressive glare as you describe it.
Okay. All right, well, thank you. I'm definitely going to go get an opinion on that from an ophthalmologist.
Very good. Good luck.
BJ, thank
All
you.
Right, bye.
Okay. Let's go to Francis in Rhinebeck. Okay, Francis, you're on.
Okay, can you hear me?
Very well.
Okay. Well, I'm calling about cataract surgery for people in older age. Now, I have a friend who's 86, and her driver's license was going to expire, and she thought maybe she had the cataract surgery. It would help her, and she'd be a little more sure of getting her license renewed. Well, she got it set up, but it didn't go well. They said that the cataract was so hard and so stuck, and then they had to really dig to get it off of the eye, and then she wound up with 7 stitches and blurred vision, and it's a little better from 1 week to another, but not much. So what do you say about old age and cataract surgery?
Well, it's a great question, but I actually believe that those cataracts should be removed before they become so advanced.
Yeah.
As you can see yourself, when it's so advanced, it can indeed lead to a higher rate of complications during cataract surgery. And I know that many people have the tendency to kind of postpone and postpone and postpone, and they're afraid of the surgery until the point where they can't see, and then they have to have the surgery. Now, of course, the surgery is tough. So
had it done when I was in my 60s, so I told her, oh, it works wonderfully, you know, and then I had her all ready to have it be wonderful results, and she didn't get them. Do you think that most people, if they haven't done anything until they're 80, they just forget it?
No. I strongly in support of doing the surgery even at that stage, because cataracts lead to other problems.
Yeah.
You may trip and fall and break your hip, and other things, driving is an issue, more accidents. There are many things that can be caused by cataracts, and I think that cataract surgery should be done when it's appropriate, including when it's advanced, except that, yes, you have more maybe complications when you neglect something. It's always
they should tell you that it should be done earlier, I think. I mean, you don't hear much about that.
Well, I believe that you're correct. If you qualify for surgery and you understand the risks involved, I think you should do the right thing for you.
Hey, Francis, yeah, well, okay. Francis, we really are running out of time. I thank you for your call. Very important, and we all appreciate it.
Thank you
for calling. Okay. Let's go to Diana in Rhinebeck. Diana, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thanks very much. I know your time is short.
No, we're okay. Go ahead.
My daughter, who is 43, was diagnosed with an atrophy of the optic nerve when she was 3. And we were told that nothing could be done. She couldn't have any glasses ever, and she was never going to really be able to do anything. It was really weird. I took her to a chiropractor, and after a few sessions, that I went back to the eye doctor, and she got glasses. Now she still has the atrophy, of course, and she has found an acupuncturist who gives her relief and actually improves her eye test, but it only lasts for a few weeks, and it's very expensive. And then the eye tests go back, but it actually, you know, she actually tests better than, you know, she's had it done 2 years now running. And I'm wondering if there's anything else for an atrophy of the optic nerve. Is there any new thing where they can in any way strengthen the nerve or... Hello?
Yes.
No, we're listening to your calls very carefully.
We're here. It's a very good question. Unfortunately, and I assume this is an isolated optic atrophy, there's nothing else. It's not like a syndrome involving other parts of the body?
No, it was when she was 3, and they didn't know if it was progressive. They thought it might be progressive. It kept sort of getting worse and then just stopped.
And it's in both eyes?
Yes.
Look, first of all, unfortunately, I don't know of anything that can be done right now to help your daughter, although I know that there's a lot of research being done, so you should be hopeful. She's only in the 40s, and things are moving very fast these days. As far as the other things that you told us, you have to understand that vision is an extremely subjective thing, and sometimes if we feel that we do something to help our vision, we actually see better. And so I'm not very surprised by the fact that she's doing better on her tests temporarily following all these special treatments. It is as
well with acupuncture with a guy who specializes in eyes.
I understand what you're saying, and hopefully it is helpful to her. Unfortunately, we don't have really long-term studies to prove that that's a good treatment, but if it helps her temporarily, then so be it, and I hope that one day we'll find something more permanent of permanent value for your daughter.
Diana, we got to go. Thank you so much.
Thanks
a lot. Okay, very quickly. Billy, we have less than a minute. Go ahead. What's your problem?
Hi, doctor. I have a pterygium in each eye, and my doctor found them or identified them maybe 10 years ago, but his suggestion was not to do anything about them until they blocked my vision.
Okay, very quickly then, doctor, what's a pterygium?
Well, pterygium is a growth of tissue on the side of the cornea that actually it's in response to ultraviolet radiation probably from the sun. You need to protect yourself and block that, you know, UV, 100% UV protection in your sunglasses, a nice cap, and stay away from very, very, from being too long in the sun. I also agree that probably it shouldn't be touched unless it gets inflamed or it starts growing over the cornea, in which case there is surgical treatment for that.
Okay, Billy, I wish we had more time for you, but that's it. You're the last call. Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. We're out of time, as you've just heard. I apologize to no one because no one was left on the line. I'd like to thank our very wonderful guest, Dr. Asher Weiner, for joining me today. Support for Medical Monday comes from the hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley, 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. Thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Brandon Holmes. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok, and I got to thank you once again, Dr. Asher Weiner from Ophthalmic Consultants here in Troy, Albany, and points east, west, and south. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. Now, stay tuned for a news update.